microscopes are analog. They're as analog as they get. They are lenses and lights, and it's honestly so are loops. Honestly, it's a strangely analog thing where all of dentistry seems to be going digital, but it's still the technology is still really cool, but it is an analog technology.
Welcome to the Digital Smile Hub, the podcast that is dedicated to making clinical dentistry simple. Join us as we decode the complexities of dental care by providing actionable insights into the diverse aspects of clinical practice, the latest trends, and the newest technologies. Whether you're a seasoned clinician or just starting out of dental school, listen in on engaging discussions, expert interviews, and a wealth of tips and tricks to enhance your clinical workflows. So turn up that volume and get ready to transform your clinical practice with the Digital Smile Hub. And now, here's your host, Dr. Tim Anderson.
What is up, everybody? This is Dr. Tim Anderson. You're listening to the Digital Smile Hub. For you returning listeners, thank you. And for everybody that's new, welcome. You know, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, you're missing out. But the good news is we're bringing our guests back. So this week, we're joined once again with none other than Dr. Alan Mead. Last week, we talked a lot about the power of magnification and also the integration of brightness with loops and lights together. So we talked a lot about leveling up and how, you know, getting more magnification and how good quality lighting, how it can improve your clinical skill set. And ultimately, just honestly, you can't unsee it, you guys. Like, you just can't unsee it. Once you go this direction, you can't go any other direction. And what I'm worried about is kind of where we want to go now, because we're going to continue on with our discussion about magnification, lighting, and all that good stuff, except we're going to take it to the next level, of which Dr. Mead is very well versed in. So Dr. Mead, welcome back to the Digital Smile Hub. We're super excited to have you, man.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to be here. Good to have you. We talked a little bit last time how you were from Minnesota, or you went to Minnesota and I went to Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what really, you know, we talk about like people's love languages. And one of my love languages is time. And in the sense of like, I like spending good quality time with my friends and my family and also with myself. So I personally spend a lot of time by myself, doing endurance events and ultra distance running and ultra distance biking. And I, after talking with Dr. Mead, I found out that he also enjoys good quality solo time on his bike.
That's true. That's true. I started during COVID, right in the beginning of COVID, and like right after they shut us down in 2020, I decided I had nothing better to do than run. So I started running. And I was very overweight then. I was probably 50 pounds heavier than I am now. And my feet are already in bad enough shape. So I ran for 92 days straight. My ankles were all wrecked. I messed myself up running pretty good. Lost a bunch of weight, interestingly. But so I decided on my 93rd day, I said, that's it. I had a bike. It was a kind of a middling road bike. I'm like, I'm going to just ride. And I hadn't really ridden it much. So I'm going to ride my bike. I'm going to switch up. I'm going to not run. I'm going to ride my bike. So I went out, and my very first ride on the bike, I got hit by a truck. I was crossing the highway near me, and the truck didn't see me and was turning left, and it hit me. And I broke my back in two places, actually. This was June 2020. Yeah, exactly. Like literally less than a month from when our town had flooded. A dam up the river had flooded, and they were worried that Midland, Michigan was going to be washed off the map. And then, so it was quite a time between COVID.
So hold on, you broke your back, your town flooded, yeah. And we went through COVID. So,
yeah, it was all within about 3 months of each other. It was quite a time. So yeah, I was in the hospital overnight. It turned out the neurosurgeon came in and said, "Well, you broke it in the low rent district," he said. So he said, you can wear this brace or not. He didn't care. It would hurt less if I wore the brace. It's going to heal the same way. He said he was going to check on me in, you know, 8 weeks or 12 weeks or something like that. And just, so I got hit by a truck. I missed like a day and a half of work. And I was in a brace, like a back brace, for a long time. And honestly, if you're going to break your back, you'd do it the way I did it, because it really didn't end up being that big of a deal. but I, you know, I didn't have such a great intro to riding a bike after a while. It was the first time I got on a bike in years. I got hit by a truck. So I then actually, I had a little cruiser bike. That bike was, I still have it, the bike that I got hit on. It's unrideable, but I have it sort of as a keepsake. I had a little cruiser bike. I started riding once I was able to, you know, I healed up from my back, and that I clearly knew running wasn't going to be something I could do because I really had kind of messed my ankles up. So I started riding this cruiser bike, and I was riding that thing like way more than cruiser bikes are meant to be kind of noodled around on. I was riding a lot. So when I turned 50, right before my birthday, I'm like, I got to get a good bike. I got to get a serious bike. I'm riding the wheels off this thing. I got to get a good bike. So the bike shops had no stock whatsoever. Just so happened they had one. It was a gravel bike, a nice gravel bike in my size, and I bought it sight unseen. And so I've been riding very regularly and buying bikes and all that sort of thing since. That would have been August 2021. So I've had the Cutthroat for 3 years, so I have a bunch of bikes. I ride almost daily. There's not many days that I don't get out and ride and put some miles on it, burn some calories on it. So could you
imagine your life like? I mean, because what I love about running and riding and all those things is that it brings a lot of clarity for me. It's a stress relief. It's good cardiovascular. It's good for my health. But I'm fine, if you're ever stuck in a rut of like brainstorming or trying to figure out what to do, man, you get out and you ride or you run or you just go out for a walk.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. It's amazing all the stuff you can count. I get done with a walk or ride, I feel like I just solved the world's problems in an hour. And I'm like, I come back and then I'm not quite as motivated after. But during the time, I'm
true.
Like, let's do it.
And I have a commute too that's 40 minutes one way. And a lot of same kind of thing happens because I got nothing to do but drive. So you got to get your brain in neutral and it works. But riding's even better. And I have to tell you that it's almost like my mood. You can tell how recently I've ridden. If it's been a couple of days, you can tell just because my life isn't as good as
your wife's really like, get back very, out there.
Yes, go and ride.
Exactly. Do it.
That's been
what,
so that,
what I love about that story is there's so many parallels with dentistry, especially clinical dentistry, because I was talking with my associate, Tom, this week, who's been with me. He's a newer grad, and he's just totally kicking ass. And he was doing his first root canal at our office. And, you know, if you remember back at school, like you're like all in your own head and trying to like overthink things and those kind of things. But we were talking how, you know, when we get out of school and where we're doing things, like we're so hungry to do stuff. We're like ready, like, let's do it, let's do it, let's do it. And I feel like every student that comes out is like, I'm going to be an oral surgeon. I'm going to be an endodontist. I'm going to be a periodontist. Like I want to do X, Y, and Z. And then we talk to individuals that are in their 60s or retiring or getting close to retirement. And you look at their scope of services. And in general, it's like, they aren't doing a lot of those things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm always saddened because I'm like, where did this go? What happened? And so many times in dentistry, we have one bad outcome and it totally throws us off our trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy just to not do it again. So I look at like, you literally like running, you got hurt, would do it. But then you go for your bike, you get hit by a freaking car and break your back. Like most people are going to be like, Alan, I'm shocked your wife let you get back on the bike. I'm like, at that point, I'm like, yeah, maybe biking, maybe we'll pick up swimming or something that's in a controlled environment.
Yeah.
But like, if you had just hung it up, you're like, you know what? I'm not going to get back on that bike. I'm not going to do it again. You look at how different your life would be and how much joy you get out of the things you're doing now and all the bikes. And I see such a parallel in dentistry. I'm like, we let little hangups just get us down. So
I found that in mountain biking, there's 100% less trucks on mountain bike trails because
that is very true. You know, depending on where you're riding, though,
there's a lot more trees you can run into. I'll say that, and it's not like I haven't done that, but I have not been hit by any trucks on the mountain bike trails. So
well, depending where you are and what part of the state or the country you're in, like the only thing I hate about mountain bike nowadays is like you said, like, trees.
Yeah,
I don't like those. For me, I hate cows.
Yeah,
I hate cows on a like. I don't even think I can express how much I hate cows. And a lot of the riding here in North Dakota, you're going through, you know, a lot of prairie land. And so there's a lot of cows. So between the cows and the horses, like it just ruins a lot of riding for me, but beats the heck out of the trucks. Cause you're right. Yeah. You don't have to deal with traffic or other riders there.
I can't even tell you how many times on, whether it's gravel biking or mountain biking, that I'll come up on deer and surprise them. I don't feel like I'm that quiet, but they're always so surprised.
Oh, you're so fast, man. And
that's
you're
what
so fast.
I'm like the wind. I don't know. It's funny. You'd think that deer are they're not as aware as you would think, considering. But yeah.
Well, it's true. So you talked about gravel riding, which, all right, listen, we got to talk
road
about this
real for quick. Country people. That's what it is.
It's basically a road bike. But I do think we should, like, Alan and I have the exact same category of bikes, which I find crazy because I don't have many of my, even my close friends that I ride with don't have the same category. So without going too much, what category bikes do you have and what do you use them for?
Okay, so I have two suspension mountain bikes. The first one was just a beginner one, and I knew I was going to want to get a carbon. So then they're the ones with full suspension, which is a stupid thing for Michigan because we don't have, there's no downhill in Michigan. I mean, it's all flat here, but I love it. And I think it's because I'm an old guy and trails are a lot smoother on the body when you got a full suspension. So it's one of those, it's got a big shock in the middle of the frame. It's very squishy. It's great. So it's a blast. I will say that, a mountain bike without that suspension, the stiffness, you probably don't lose as much speed and stuff, but I'm an old guy, so I like the comfort of it. I just love it. And the other thing about cycling that is very much like dentistry is there's a never ending list of gadgets you can add to your stuff. That's what I've been doing lately. But then I have this gravel bike, which is basically, like I said, it's like a road bike, but for country roads. So it's kind of a cross between a road bike and a mountain bike a little bit. And I that's the first decent bike I got. I love that too. I really do. It's good. I mean, it's great for burning calories, but I also have two fat tire bikes. I have a fat bike that's a rigid frame fat bike that's just older and heavier, and that's the second bike I got after the gravel bike. And then I had a great story. I bought a bike. It's called it's a Salsa Bucksaw. It is a suspension fat tire bike.
I am familiar with that bike.
I ride in the snow all the time. Like the cycling is four seasons when you've got a fat tire bike. You can ride in the snow really easily. So I'd been looking for a Bucksaw. During COVID, there were like five of the right size suspension fat tire bikes that were carbon fiber. And then one morning I woke up and said, that's it. I'm buying one of these damn things. I've seen them. I really want one. And I couldn't find the fiber one. I couldn't find the carbon fiber one. So I kept my eyes open and I finally saw one that was it's the metal frame one. I think it's probably an aluminum frame. I don't know. It was in a Salsa group, and it was like on the far side of Chicago. I'm like, man, you know, I'd love this bike, but I'm not going to go all the way to Chicago to get a bike. So back and forth with this guy for a while, he finally says, listen, I'll bring it to you. And it was not, he wasn't asking that much for it. And I'm realizing as this guy from the far side of Chicago is trying to unload this bike for not that much money, he's going to bring it to me. I'm like, first off, this guy's a criminal. This guy has to be. This has got to be a stolen bike.
Something's not adding up here.
Why is this guy going to drive from Chicago, you know, 6 hours to Michigan to bring me a bike? And he got there. It was like dark in my parking lot. I'm like, this guy's going to kill me. He's going to make a skin suit out of me. He didn't. I gave him cash in the dark in my parking lot, and he did not murder me. I don't know that I didn't look for any like stolen bike reports because I didn't want to know. Honestly, I like the bike too much.
Don't ask too many questions, you guys.
I fear that someone may have maybe out a bike that I really like. Anyhow, now my sons are all about the right size to be. So I don't feel quite as bad for owning so many bikes because my sons can ride them. So they. My oldest son loves the Bucksaw. He's his greatest bike ever. And then my first mountain bike, which was a really entry-level suspension bike, my younger son rides now too. So I don't feel quite as horrible for having a bunch of bikes I don't ride.
Owning too many bikes. It is a good problem to have.
It's a habit of cyclists, man.
But you're not wrong on the gadgets. It's just like dentistry. You can just start adding all this. So one thing that Alan has that I'm envious of, he has electronic shifting on his bike, you guys. So like most of us have like a clicking lever that pulls a cable. He has an electronic
Bluetooth for crying.
Bluetooth. There's an motor that shifts.
I don't know how to use the app, but there is an app if you want. It's crazy. You can do all kinds of stuff with it.
Well, and ironically too, is like you talked about fat bikes. Fat bikes are probably my favorite thing in the world. Like I love fat bikes because I have a carbon fiber hardtail fat bike that I ride all year round. And winter riding is my favorite because you like doing a lot of solo riding. My favorite thing to do with regards to running and biking is winter running and biking because it's so quiet.
Yeah.
You just hear the snow either under your feet or under the tires. There's something just like hypnotic about it. So the other thing that I love about it is I really, in North Dakota, it's always freaking dark in the winter. Yeah. Like it's dark at 8 a.m. and it's dark at 5 p.m. Yeah. and it's like, it's always dark. So we have to get used to riding in the dark. And so like my bike, it's like, I have like light bars on it everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because like, here's more parallels to dentistry. It's like the more light I have, it's amazing how much more enjoyable the ride is. I feel safer.
With the right lights, you literally are lighting up the forest. It's crazy. You can see, well, I'll bring a light. I'll be able to see. And you're like, no. Like I got two or three on the front of my bike and a big light bar on my helmet. It's like, it's brighter than daylight in front of me. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. And it's fun as hell. It really is. You're like, I'm in the middle of the snow riding a bike and it's so bright. And it's like 8 o'clock at night and completely dark. It's a blast.
And it changes your perspective on everything. Like everything looks different. It feels like the trails and stuff you ride normally, they just feel different. So like lighting
is cold enough on a fat bike. They're much faster trails. Like if it's packed snow and ice, it's like a track. It's unbelievable. We've had like not such cold winters the last couple of years, and it's been kind of lame actually. But with good snow cover, and if it's been cold and it's packed down, it's fast. Get some spike tires on those bad boys and it goes out. Yes.
All right. So lesson learned, you guys. Everybody needs a fat bike, a gravel bike, and at least one, maybe two mountain bikes. Your life will be better. Just trust me. So, I love it because like this is, you have to have that balance in life. Like you can't just like, I love dentistry. But you need to have something outside of just dentistry. Mm-hmm. And so hobbies like that are great. And I'm a big advocate for hobbies that include movement, whatever that is. I mean, it could be something as simple as fishing. It could be running, walking, hiking, you know, traveling, whatever it might be. But just having those things to keep moving forward in bigger pictures. So, no, that's awesome. That's part of it. Like, you and I just have a lot in common between the Minnesota, the biking. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why I love you, man. So. Mm-hmm. But believe it or not, you know, we're talking about leveling up and doing all this stuff, and I could talk about bikes all day. One of the areas that I am so intrigued by in dentistry is the impact that magnification has had on clinical dentistry, specifically restorative. Like when we think of magnification, everybody just thinks of like, especially when we start talking about like higher level magnification, like something like a microscope, everybody just assumes that it's for... Oh, you got to be doing endo. Have an endo. Yeah. So you have, talk to us a little bit about the how many microscopes you have and the fact that you're not just using them for endo. Like, why would I need this if I don't do endo?
I have four microscopes. I've owned six or seven and I've sold some. I got my first one in 2011. And then I added, you can find them used. It's funny, for one thing, for a show like this where everything's digital, microscopes are analog. They're as analog as they get. They are lenses and lights. And it's honestly, so are loops, honestly. It's a strangely analog thing where all of dentistry seems to be going digital, but it's still the technology is still really cool, but it is an analog technology. And people, you know, that's one of the things people don't really realize. I don't think that a digital microscope is on the horizon, I don't think it's on the horizon for dentistry anyhow. I don't know if this is going to happen in dentistry, maybe someday, but like a heads up thing, I mean, it'd be kind of cool. In any case, so I have two, what would be considered global, the brand would be global. They're an American made manufacturer, but they're both of them are older than the current iteration if you were buying one new from them. But what's funny about it, that is an older microscope, the technology and the lenses and lights are essentially as good as what you can get now. A lot of times it's more the form factor. So you'll see that like Zeiss sells a microscope called the Pro Ergo. It's a very fancy microscope with zoom lenses and everything like that. But the manufacturer, it's the same microscope, the same Pro Ergo that was made in 1993. It's exact same. Like it's not changed. The design hasn't changed one iota. So a lot of, even an older scope is still useful in a way that a lot of the newer ones are. So then I have that. I have a CJ Optic Flexion, which is a German manufactured microscope. I had the first one in the United States. And then I have a Zoomax OMS 2380, which is a really cool fully featured scope. It's they're sold in the United States by Innova Illumination, the same company that I'm using their loops and headlamp to. They're manufactured in China, and they have a design that's very much like that Pro Ergo, which is their higher end, but then this is the next level down, and I've never seen a design like this one. It's probably the coolest piece of technology I've seen in my office. Really cool. Microscopes have all kinds of different features on them and stuff like that. But what's really cool microscopes allow you to have basically perfect lighting and as high a magnification as you can get. Basically, they allow you, the ergonomics are really good because you're sitting up straight and like you said in the last episode, you're looking ahead, you're sitting up straight, looking ahead, letting the microscope doing all the bending. So you've got, much higher magnification, much better ergonomics. When set up correctly, the documentation is really good, really good. I'm going to tell you though, you're a photographer and anyone who's got still photography through a microscope is still not as good as a DSLR camera. So I have fought this battle for the better part of, since I got them in 2011, in my mind, I'm like, I should be able to get photos that good through. You can't do it.
Do you record it all like video?
Yeah. Video is awesome. And effortless when done correctly, it's effortless. Still photography is, honestly, if you are doing for presentation, still photography, you can't beat a DSLR.
Yeah.
Which I have a couple of those too. Forever, I had wanted the microscope to be that still photographer, but short of it. I probably could put a ring flash on a microscope if you were super geared into it. I have not done that. I know that some of my microscope heroes have. Some of those guys, they hang a bunch of cameras off their microscope. it's much like the bicycles. There's pretty much no end to the gadgets you can add to this stuff. So,
well, and I always equated a lot of the photography aspect. It's kind of like when you're putting a teleconverter on an existing lens setup.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it'll get you there, and you'll get an image, but the quality is just not the same. You're just going through so much more glass.
It is. So. It's exactly right. And honestly, the ZoomX OMS 2380 that I have, that's my newest scope. And interestingly, they have a model now that I wouldn't, if I were telling someone to get a microscope, I would tell you to get a ZoomX, but a different model that's a little bit more compact. Also, Innova sells them too. They have a built-in video and still camera, so
built
you don't have to.
Scope.
Yeah, it's built in, and it takes pretty good pictures. But what's really funny, even at that, because you're looking through eyepieces, and you're seeing well what you can see, but you can't tell what the camera is seeing unless you look at a monitor. So when you're taking video and photography, I have a big monitor. They're hooked up to my monitors, my operatories. And I find myself looking at the monitor a lot of time just to make, for when I'm working on documentation, to make sure it's in focus and actually to make sure, because the microscopes are what they call vignetted. So what you can see through the eyepieces is much wider than what the camera typically sees. So it's great. You're seeing amazing stuff through the oculars. The camera is seeing less than that. And all of a sudden you think you've got the greatest video in the world and you realize that the camera was kind of looking at it. It wasn't looking at the tooth. It was looking a little off to the side. And you're like, ah. So it's really, to me, I found it's important to have a monitor right there. Or, God, there's so many features. There's so many things to talk about with microscopes. But you can actually, the ZoomX is pretty cool. They have an attachment where you can put an iPhone or even an iPad. I'm trying to get one with an iPad that allows you to use the built-in camera on the, so that in the iPad and iPhone have an autofocus feature. So there, you don't have to do the focusing, the camera focuses. So that's a little bit, simplicity is really good there. And of course, you're just touching the phone to take the picture. And you can make it so that you can use that as a secondary monitor for your assistant to use, because it's pretty neat. There's some pretty cool things you can do with that stuff.
Well, I know the assistants love it, and trust me, like we can geek out about all the details of this stuff, but moving back for a second, like what kind of clinician, general practitioner, who should be considering or looking at adding microscopes? Like who is that type of clinician?
Well,
that's a totally loaded question.
Endodontists, of course, are the ones that were using it early on. And what's really funny about it is endodontists, there's a lot of features that I use as a restorative dentist that endodontists don't need, because endodontists, basically, if you're doing non-surgical endo, you set up in one spot and you're doing all the, like, you don't have to you don't have to see the distal of your preparation. You don't have to, you know what I'm saying? Like you're looking straight
down. Looking straight down.
You basically, you put it where you need it. And you don't have to move very much. I am an enthusiast. That's what I first saw them probably in the early 2000s on Dentaltown. I just thought they were the coolest thing ever. And so I was in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to get one of those. I'm going to learn how to use that thing. I think sometimes it may take an enthusiast to get really into it. But that said, everything I do through the scope, I'm doing at a higher level than I can do even with high magnification loops, because it is, I mean, like as much more as you're seeing with loops and a headlight, I can see just that much more with a microscope. It is insane. And as I mentioned before, I did a whole podcast on this. You know, if you can make it look pretty decent under high magnification on a microscope, it's going to look amazing. It's very much like the blown up version of your scanner. And you can see that. And I mean, it's wild to me. Your hands get steadier and more, you know, the movements you make are more intentional when it's at that. It's just blown up at this ridiculous amount. Like it's the craziest thing ever. You look at the end of an Explorer and it looks like it, you know, it's like as big as a hot dog. It's it's a big wide thing. And you're looking at it's this little spindly thing. It's just nuts that you're up so close. The other thing that's really funny, I have them in my hygiene operatories. Okay. So I do all my hygiene exams through the microscope and I record. And so on some level, I have an archival, you know, a video of an exam that I've done on all these patients for years now. I've been doing that since probably 2016 or something. So I got years of that, which is interesting. I won't lie to you. I don't go back and look at the exams very often, but I do occasionally. And there's times when you're like, did I see that the last time or did I see it? And you can go back. It's crazy. You can go back and look at the exam that you did. And all of a sudden, your exams also become a little bit more intentional. For me, I look at it, I go, it's videography. Why would I bother to record? If it's almost like you're making sure you're making a movie for someone who might come by later and see this exam. So you want to make sure that you're seeing all the things that you might want to know from this patient, from an exam. So all of a sudden, what you do during a recall exam becomes much more intentional. And like literally, like I said, I got that monitor up there and I'm looking and making sure that I can see these different. So it's pretty cool. It's the documentation is cool. It's hard. It's not, I wanted it to be effortless. I wanted it to be, it's as easy as play. It's never quite like that because.
No good technology is.
No, it's exactly right. You're right. And you know the story. When you're picturing it in your head, you're like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. I'll just pull the trigger. It's not really like that. But it's still worthwhile, I found. And I think it makes you better at a lot of things. It improves you in ways you didn't realize that it would. Like, for instance, my hygiene exams, my recall exams, are much more intentional than they ever were because I want to make sure I'm getting all these things, you know, in the documentation. So that's kind of a funny thing. I never would have expected that when I was doing it. I love doing operative in a microscope. It's a blast. And like I said, here's the crazy thing. Polishing. Okay. We polish everything, right? And polishing is for me and probably for almost everyone else, it's like the last thing you're going to do. You're going to take no time at all doing it. And you're just like
just trying to get done.
You're literally like, I'm almost done. Let me do this. And all of a sudden, what is polishing? Polishing is making bigger scratches and then smaller scratches until you can't see the scratch. Well, under a microscope, you can see those scratches for a damn long time. So you really have to cut. First off, you have to be better at technically how to do it. And you're using a finer polishing mechanism. Like you go through more steps, which seems tedious until you realize that's a killer polish. It's a really, or you learn ways to polish different materials and stuff. And I will say, polished zirconia, well-polished zirconia is awesome. And zirconia is not polished that well. That's where you see the wear stuff, right? You know what I'm talking about. All of these things are, it makes you think about things that you might not have thought about as much. Microscopes, even more so than loops, because it's just like, I mean, literally, it's like, it's almost more than you could, it's more visual information than you could even take in. It's a lot.
So do you still use your loops? Are you strictly
I use the loops more than I use the microscope because frankly, the microscope is not intuitive. And I've been using them for years and it's still, there are parts of the mouth that are really tough to work on. I think it's really cool idea not that everyone wants to buy that many microscopes, but having them in the hygiene operatories makes me a better better at it, you know, if I'm doing operative restorative dentistry or whatever, because you, when you're doing this, basically this recall exam, and you're, you know, it's dental cinematography, you have to be able to know what angles you want to show and where you need to move, because you want to move as little as possible, but you need to move enough so you can see everything. And honestly, doing an exam in hygiene helps you really learn how to do that. So I honestly,
yeah, well, and I think the reps are everything. I mean, that's with any technology, and the more you do it, the better you get.
100%.
Do you use like a hybrid technique where you like, I'm going to do this part of the procedure with my loops, and then maybe I'm going to do the finishing or this procedure sometimes with the scope?
Sometimes, and sometimes I'm just lazy about the scope. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Sometimes, like, and what's really funny is my rule is always, look, if you have it on wheels, everyone's like, oh, I just get one and I'll just put on wheels using any operatory. You won't.
Yeah.
You won't. If it's not, I mean, I have them in every operatory and I still don't grab it all the time. You know, I literally, like, it's literally as much as I can just, like, move my arm and grab the thing and it's there, and I still don't use it all the time. If it's on wheels in another operatory, you're not going to go get that. You're not going to do it. So on some level, it's a matter of, you got to make it really convenient for yourself and you got to really commit to it. And there's people that are probably more committed, you know, about it than I am. What I'll say is I never have a regret pulling it out and using it. I'll like refining margins for Crown and Bridge under a microscope. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. You're like, wow, this is. And I mean, you had mentioned when you go to Spear and you'll see Bob Winter do stuff under a microscope, or Jason Smithson does all of his composite stuff at Spear under a microscope too. It's you can see so much. It's wild, but it'll slow you down too. I mean, it even if you've used it for a long time, it'll slow you down because you just can see so much more. It's so.
But I think it highlights a fantastic, important philosophy with regards to sometimes it's good to slow down so you can speed up.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Like
fair
enough. Now, what was like, because here's the, like, I have tried using a microscope a few times, like when I lecture and we're doing like a hands-on exercise, like the best way to show anybody is with a scope.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm good with optics and cameras, and I just struggled. I felt like I was a fish out of water. Like everything that was backwards was not only backwards, but mirrored and then... Yeah.
There is a learning curve. You do need to, your skill set with using a mirror for indirect vision makes a big difference. I would say that between the microscope and high magnification, I'm pretty good with a mirror, like indirect vision. I would say I'm probably above average with that. Like, and I mean, you can do a lot of dentistry with no mirror. Let's be honest. I mean, you can kind of contort yourself or whatever. And frankly, using a microscope with direct is really great. Like, I mean, if you're refining the buckle of an upper crown preparation and you can do that directly, you will never have a more precise, it's awesome. But I mean, a lot of it, you got to be pretty good with a mirror. That's one thing. The other thing is that there's a technology that's relatively new within the last 10 probably years. So the objective lens of the microscope, that's the lens that's at the very bottom part. That's the closest thing to your patient. And it used to be that you would buy a fixed objective lens. So basically, to be in focus, you had to have this fixed lens anywhere between about 250 and 400 millimeters, typically. And that's the amount of, that's the distance between the bottom part of the microscope and what you're focusing on. And of course, the higher the magnification you are, the narrower your amount of focus is, just like with loops. So if you had a fixed objective lens on your microscope, you had to either move the microscope up and down to get it to focus, or you had to move the patient up and down to focus. And for the longest time, that's all they had. So you really had to be good with patient placement and microscope placement. Most microscopes have the option of, or even come equipped with, what they call a variable objective, a varioscope or a variable objective microscope. And I have to tell you, if you're starting new with a microscope, don't even bother unless you've got a varioscope. Don't even bother, because it's literally the difference between it being not that hard and really hard. Okay. So if you didn't have a varioscope, that's why it was hard. Like I can pretty much put the patient where pretty close to where I want them, the scope pretty much where I want it, and then I can fine tune it with the varioscope. And so all of my scopes have a vario on it. And the two in my operatories, well, the Zoomax has it just, it's a thumb knob on either side. So it's like right there, right along with the fact it's got a little trigger on the hand thing that allows you to, like, a long pole turns the video on and a short pole is a still. I mean, it's all built in. It's very slick. They've come a long ways with all the controls and stuff, but it's a varioscope or nothing for me. And I got to tell you, some of my microscope heroes don't use a varioscope. They never did and they never have.
They just got it.
Yeah. But oh, I mean, yeah.
But what's amazing about that technology, though, is it continues to advance and change.
Yep.
And I think that's something taken into factor. One of the things I keep thinking about, I'm like, you know, this may be wishful thinking on my end, but I'm like, I keep seeing more, you know, as AI keeps getting better and mm-hmm. as, you know, robotics and everything, I'm like, at what point, or do you even think this possible? Because this is where my head goes. I'm like, when are we going to see something like that is more of like a headset, like an Apple Vision Pro type
yeah.
setup where I'm looking at that working through, it's like the scope is just separate. Like I, for me, I'm like, okay, there's all these different things where we could have all this spatial kind of VR or augmented reality.
Yeah.
Like how much better could that be? Like, I don't know. I like that's where my head keeps
a lot of it. There's actually quite a bit of heads up. Siler has a heads up display that where the monitor is mounted right on the microscope. It's a decent sized monitor, and that's a three dimensional heads up thing, which is pretty cool. I know that Zoomax has a three dimensional the capacity to do a 3D camera. And so Buchanan, the endo, the guy who basically
the pluggers
created Nighttie Files. I mean, he basically, like, modern endodontics owes everything to Dr. Buchanan. He uses a Zoomax scope that's a it doesn't even have eyepieces. It's just the scope, and he has these insanely large 3D monitors and lining his entire operatory. And so he just uses the scope and uses that as a heads up display.
Interesting.
It is interesting. I think he's a one in a million because honestly, I don't even think they make those monitors anymore. Like there's like, cause they're the three, you remember 3D televisions were,
oh, yeah.
It was a technology that didn't really catch on very much. And that was,
well, that's why I keep thinking this, like these Apple Vision
yep.
things and, you know, like the Meta Quest, I'm like, that's where I'm like, okay, with regards to like, especially microscope style, you know, dentistry as well as surgical approaches and overlaying all this. I'm like, I just feel like there's so many different ways we can
yeah.
continue to advance. So I get really excited. Like everyone talks about like the heydays of dentistry. I'm like, I am so grateful to be practicing at the time I'm practicing right now
yeah.
because things continue to evolve and advance. And I'm grateful that I feel like I'm still with it.
Yeah.
And in the sense that I'm like, it's not exceeded everything I understand quite yet.
When are they going to be able to incorporate a scanner into a microscope of some sort.
Yes.
The reality is because they're both visual technologies. I know scanners are digital. And I can't, as I said, I haven't seen any digital microscopes, but I can't imagine that they wouldn't do that at some point because, I mean, the one thing about the digital aspects of cameras, you know, the three-dimensional cameras, they're getting less expensive,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so all of a sudden, I mean, so I feel like the future could entail that, although right now it seems like it'd be such a specialty product, but that'd be awesome to be able to scan directly from a microscope. I mean, it would make a lot of sense. I mean, you're pointing your eyes in the direction with the scope. There would be a lot there. That'd be very cool.
Well,
I have used a heads up 3D display connected to a microscope. It was a prototype. When they brought my scope to my office, they brought it along for fun. No, they didn't. They came for a separate thing and they brought it along. It was really cool.
I get excited because, like you said, I'm a photography guy. So mm-hmm. I look at the advancements in photography at this point. Like the newer cameras, the autofocusing system is almost not even fair because it uses literally not only eye recognition on the subjects, but eye tracking of your eye to pick the focus point.
Yeah.
The new cameras now have AI built into them so that they anticipate the motion. So if it's a basketball game, it recognizes that it's a basketball game. It recognizes the ball. The computer within the camera then tracks the ball.
Yeah.
If the ball is passed, it intuitively retracts on the next. Like, it is absolutely crazy to see how advancements in AI and software are integrating into existing hardware, but also advancing the next generation of hardware. And I'm like, I look at microscopes and dentistry. I'm like, this is an untapped.
There's a lot of potential.
Oh my gosh! Because right now, I mean, think of how many endodontists there are, and how many general dentists there are.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a huge market share if it can be done intuitively.
I have to say, it is the main reason I got into scopes is not because I'm like I want to have that much, but they're they're cool as hell. I thought they were. I thought it was fascinating.
I like the way you think, man. I get behind that. I get behind that.
It's a little bit silly to be. Like I said, I'm an enthusiast, and so that's kind of why I got into them. And now it's hard because there's a lot of people that have bought microscopes because they seem cool, but they're kind of just like anything. They're not easy to use. You got to go out of your way to incorporate them. And I suspect you could tell me stories about technology that you wanted to be easier and better to use. But it's still, if you can stick with it, it's worthwhile. And that's where I land with scopes. I will say there's never been a time where a microscope is easier to incorporate into your workflow, even if you're doing restorative. I mean, the endodontists will tell you it's been a piece of cake. But like I said, the endodontists aren't moving around very much. They're
correct. Yeah.
Different. Even the physical movement of the scopes gets better and better. Like it's much easier to move and very precisely the way you want it. It's cool. And they're hitting the right things. Although, like I said, the camera systems probably have way more capacity than they've been using. That'll be an interesting thing to see. I hope in my career that we start seeing some of that stuff.
Well, the future is really bright with this. I get really excited, which is why I wanted to talk about this topic. But I want to close here on two things, because I've talked to a decent number of clinicians regarding microscopes. A lot of my close friends are endodontists. And you brought up two things on microscopes that I honestly never really thought about. And it resonated so hard with me. And the first one was when you were talking about polishing with regards to we always look at ergonomics and all that stuff with microscopes. And you can see your prep bigger and all that. But what resonated me when you're talking about your polishing was how it influenced your technique.
Yep.
And how your skill set of how you're doing it, how you evaluate products that you're trying, or how this polish or that, like all of a sudden it changes your capability to truly evaluate objectively products. And not only that, then how you can influence your own workflow to make your clinical outcomes better. That for me was like, I never really thought about it from that standpoint. I'm like, yeah, I can see my prep better and I can, I get that. But I never really thought of it from the standpoint of like, I can try different techniques and improve my clinical skill set by evaluating my techniques because I can see so much better. So that I thought was a really, really important takeaway. But the number one takeaway, I want everybody here, if you gain one thing from this whole podcast, as much as I would love it to be about fat bikes and bikes, the one thing I want you to take away was what Alan said with regards to being intentional. Like, that resonated with me so hard from the standpoint of what the magnification did for you and what it does for so many clinicians is it helps you gain intent. It slowed your hands down. It made your movements more calculated and precise. We aren't just willy-nilly going around. And for me, that's where I see my own skill set improving, is that if I start doing things with intent, whether that's how I work with my team, how I communicate with my friends and family, how I do dentistry, how I ride my bike. Doing things with intent is the fastest way to grow. Mm-hmm. And so I'd never really thought about microscopes with regards to you did everything, like you sacked away your hygiene exams. You do it with intent and purpose. When you're prepping a tooth, you do it with intent and purpose because you can see exactly what you're doing. So I that was just something that honestly, man, I was not expecting that tonight. And that hit me hard. That's why I wrote it down like that. That's good. Like I need everybody to understand that. So Alan, thank you so much for joining us the last 2 weeks. You guys, if you didn't catch our last episode on loops and lights, you got to check this out. But if you're really looking to start elevating your practice, like that, like you just need to take the leap of faith and try it. If there's anything in your gut that's like, cow, I want a little bit more magnification, or like, what could that do for my practice or for my clinical capabilities? Like, get out there, talk to a rep, go to a trade show, reach out to Alan and I, use the community within our dental profession as a resource so that way you can help improve your practice and your clinical skill set. It's a small world. We're here to help each other. Alan, closing thoughts. You're awesome, man. I appreciate everything. What do you got?
It's really funny that I would say I haven't had any regrets. Like even on a day-to-day basis, when I'm always glad that I'm like, you know, I'm gonna pull the scope out and do this. And I'm always like, man, I should be doing this for everything. It's like I never have any real regrets from that. With all the magnification stuff, all you have to do is be without it for a little while, and you realize what a value it can bring to your practice. So it's like one of those things where you don't even know until you've tried it. Like I'm not saying that a microscope is for everyone. I wouldn't practice without it, even though I don't use it for every single thing. But I mean, in the same way that I really like having the headlamp and the loops, the high magnification on that, I'm very sold on that. But even though it is not what I do everything all the time, I have no regrets. I have no regrets on all of it because it's helped me grow in a lot of ways that I didn't realize it was going to help me grow. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Take it to heart, everybody. Thank you so much, Dr. Mead, for joining us. We'll catch you guys next week on the Digital Smile Hub. Until then, have a great evening or day or drive to work, whatever you're doing, and we'll catch you next week. Take care, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you get notified when all the new content is released. And don't forget to rate, review, and share this podcast with all your friends and colleagues. For more information about all things happening within the 3D Dentist family, follow us at www.3d-dentist.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you are leaving with new insights to help transform and level up your practice. Until next time, keep smiling.